Welcome to Audio 3 of Discovery-Oriented Conversational Process inspired by Janella Bird. I am Josephine Stanton. The text of this audio is on the website https://talkthatheals.org/. This second audio describes the point of difference number 2. This focuses on addressing the power relation in the therapeutic relationship. The risks of this power dynamic are widely acknowledged in the prohibitions on engaging in sexual contact with a client or patient, but much less attention is paid to the more common and subtle risks of the person in the client or patient role feeling misunderstood, missed, or discounted. These experiences can and do happen in any interaction, but there can be an added potency if they happen in what we are hoping will be a therapeutic relationship. The therapeutic relationship is set up with the expectation that a therapist will have particular expertise in understanding and making sense of our experience. These expectations enable the person seeking help to relate in a more open and less guarded manner. However, they also open the risk that where there is an experience of feeling misunderstood, missed, or discounted, the person might feel that this indicates there is something the matter with them. They are more likely to resort to silence or just not come back than let the expert know they have got it wrong. Being misunderstood in a friendship without this power dynamic and these expectations of a special expertise can be very different. I had an experience of this in the period some months after a bereavement. I was on a bike ride with friends. I had difficulty negotiating a small obstacle and became quite upset, almost tearful. I described the intensity of my feelings to my friend and asked, Is this the sort of thing everybody experiences? My friend replied, I don't think so. That's anxiety. This did not ring true for me and I pondered on it. As I became increasingly clear that this didn't fit for me, I was able to find a description for it that sat more comfortably. I decided it was not anxiety, it was grief. I felt relief. In being able to name the tumult of emotions I was experiencing, it was easier to accept them. The conversation with my friend had felt very helpful. The clarity of my internal response of, no, it's not that, helped me make sense of it in a way that worked for me. It might have been very different had we been in a power dynamic where I was expecting her to have more understanding of my internal experience than I did. I might have been troubled by my failure to identify this anxiety and wonder what the matter with me was that I experienced so much anxiety. We may not seek or value the power people experience us holding in the therapeutic relationship. We may not even notice it. This does not mean it is not there. We tend not to notice the power we hold in any relationship. The power we experience others holding in relation to us feels much more apparent. I had a lesson in this from a man in a forensic hospital. I was asking him about his life and he seemed quite guarded. He asked me how I could expect him to talk openly in the context of the power I held over him. The power dynamic he was naming was obvious. He was subject to controls under both the criminal justice and mental health legislation. He was likely to be locked up for years and would be dependent on reports from professionals for regaining freedom. However, I had not noticed this power differential. I was a junior registrar and felt no one would take any notice of my ideas in making significant decisions about his life. In fact, they might have read observations I put in his notes. But I felt like a small fish in a big pond, conscious only of a desire to find a way to be helpful. I felt, and was, very naive. As a clinician, I have often felt stuck and powerless, particularly when I don't seem able to be helpful. I have experienced powerlessness in the context of holding responsibility for detaining a person in hospital and treating them against their will. I expect this does not approach the level of powerlessness experienced by the patient. But when we experience powerlessness ourselves, we are at even more risk of losing sight of the powerlessness the other person is experiencing in relation to us. We cannot disappear the power relation by being open, warm, unassuming, and accepting. In fact, this could even make the power dynamic more insidious and difficult to address. Someone feeling disempowered, disrespected, or not heard by us may be even more vulnerable to concluding that there must be something wrong with them if we are so nice and supportive and they're not able to feel comfortable with us. We need to be active in engaging the person's participation in a collaborative process. We can begin by exploring the hopes they have for the conversation. A starting point might be, if this conversation was useful to you, what do you hope would change? Ongoing negotiation of the agenda can be supported by checking in, as in Strategy 3 described in Audio 1, or in the context of drawing threads together in Point of Difference 3 described in Audio 4, we might ask something like, are we talking about what is of most interest to you? Or, if we are giving a summary, of these themes we have been talking about, what are you most drawn to? Positive action to engage participation in building trust and safety together is also needed for a collaborative discovery process. This will be described in Point of Difference 3 in Audio 4. As you can see by my referring all over the place, this division into strategies and points is somewhat artificial. They are overlapping and interdependent. The power of the conversation comes from the interweaving of the strands. Unless we engage in active prioritizing of a person's own knowledge and resources, they are at risk of experiencing their knowledge as of less value than the knowledge we hold. If we make sense of the person's experience in a way which does not sit well with them, they are at risk of taking up our ideas and dismissing their own. The setup we work in prioritizes the knowledge we hold so that our knowledge will trump theirs and send their knowledge underground. It takes positive action on our part to prevent this imposition of knowledge. Colonization provides a stark example of imposition of knowledge. The colonized people suffer losses in many ways. One of them is devaluing and even loss of the knowledge, custom, language and mores of the colonized group, who risk coming to experience themselves as of less value. A practical example of this is the knowledge held by generations of the Indigenous people of Australia in using controlled burning to manage the risk of forest fire. The navigation skills used by the Pacific peoples to find relatively tiny Pacific islands in the vast Pacific Ocean have come dangerously close to being lost forever. Power dynamics and prioritization of knowledge are two sides of the same coin. Making sense of this requires a postmodern epistemology. On the website, I have included some context and exploration around this. Imposition of knowledge is a subtle process and will happen without being apparent in the natural flow of conversation. We need 100% focus on identifying opportunities to interrupt this flow and bring forward thoughts and feelings coming up for the other person. What is happening in the room is alive with possibility. Describing the responses we notice in the room can enable the person to bring forward something they may only be barely aware of themselves. We may hear all sorts of things we don't expect. For example, can you put words to those tears? What was I saying when you started to notice that sadness? I noticed as I asked that question, there seemed to be a lot of thought. What was the effect of the question? That laugh, is it an amused laugh, an embarrassed laugh, or something else? I noticed you smiling as your mum talked about the behaviour problems. Was there a fun aspect? We also need to be attending to the responses we are having. As discussed with respect to noticing judgment in Audio 1, we may not want to describe the responses we are noticing in ourselves. They may be telling us more about our own lives than those of other people. But we are noticing something. And an inquiry in the spirit of profound respectfulness is low risk. It may open up something which surprises us. As in Strategy 2, described in Audio 1, when we do tell people about our ideas, we can take care to minimize the risk that we trump their knowledge. We can ask them for permission to offer our knowledge and actively seek the responses they are having, for example. Would you like me to tell you about some of the things I've learned about and seen in my practice that relate to this situation? What are you noticing in your thoughts and feelings as I am talking? I notice you shifting around in your seat and looking away when I mentioned X. Did you experience some discomfort around that? If you did have some worries about what I am saying, would you be able to let me know? This is the end of Audio 3 on how Janella's approach addresses the power relation in the therapeutic relationship. and the associated risk of doing harm, particularly by imposition of knowledge. Thank you for listening. Feedback or ideas are welcome on info@talkthatheals.org. Trial of Janella's work on the website.